The home run is the important one. It's where all the important goals are cast. And the home run in our case is a run towards the completion of yet another successful Samba XP conference. No, we don't have to run home, but if you want to, you may. But not until it's over, Volker. A successful conference always involves a lot of people putting in a lot of effort. And at every one of the Samba XP conferences that we've had to date, all 12 of them leading up to this, we've been careful to recognize the work of the people that have put in effort behind the scenes in order to make the conference a success, the people who have executed the planning, and I don't want them to be forgotten this time. We've also recognized our first year conference attendees and those who have come back year after year because the punishment hasn't been successful in previous years. But there is one group that was pointed out to me last night that we have failed to adequately recognize. And that is the students who have come out of universities on internships with various companies and who during their internship or elsewhere or at other times have managed to find their way to the Samba XP conference. Are there any students here at the moment? We have at least one. Well, I would like you to show your thanks for the and welcome for the students who have been and who are here. It's young blood and new ideas that help to make an open source software project successful. And our experience in the past has been that the new people who have come in, many of whom are Samba team members today, have made an immeasurably wealthy, and by that I mean the wealth of knowledge type contribution to the success of a Samba project. I refer to people like Andrew Bartlett, who's not with us today, people like Julian, people like Alexander Bokovoy, Chris Hertel, Kai Blinn, Metz, and many others. They have brought new ideas to bear and have helped to expand the scope and horizons of Samba, and therefore it's important that we do recognize the newcomers on the scene, and we want to encourage them. So I'd like you to raise your hand for the newcomers who are here and just show your appreciation for their presence. We will, of course, have our conference wind-up session here when you'll have the opportunity to throw eggs, tomatoes, and rotting fruit at the Samba team. They do deserve it, so I hope you've brought a supply. However, before you get that opportunity, we have a couple more presentations coming. I'd like you to welcome Simo Sorsa. Simo Sorsa has been with the team for over 10 years. And Simo works with Red Hat Software these days. His specialty is identity management. He's going to speak to us on the identity management side of things in OpenStack. And I'd like you to put your hands together for him as he delivers his presentation.
Thank you, John. And thank you for the introduction. I've been working for many years now in identity management at Red Hat, and I've been also working a little bit recently in OpenStack. I mostly do consulting within our extended team with the people that do identity management in OpenStack. But this presentation is not just about identity management. It's more about introducing OpenStack to an audience that might not really know it very well. So what is OpenStack? OpenStack is a cloud operating system. That's the definition you can find on their website. However, what is a cloud operating system? Basically, it's a collection of services that can provide a coherent computing platform that can be accessed on demand have self-service mode for all the users. That would define the cloud, and an operating system on the client would provide these services. So elasticity, the ability to create and destroy machines very quickly, pooling of the resources so that you basically use your hardware resources to the maximum, are the key drivers for who provide these cloud services. And another aspect is for who provides the cloud is also being able to measure and measure how these services are used in order to either do internal billing or even customer billing when these services offered for external parties. And one of the defining things for the OpenStack cloud at least is that everything is available over the network. All the services are available over the network, and the king is the APIs. It's not about the implementation of the single services. So these can be seen as the base components. This is the pretty picture. It seems very clean and simple. You have basically five components currently in OpenStack that can be identified. The compute component is the most important, is what manages machines. Then there is storage, of course, also very important. It's what keeps all the data. Networking, fundamental in order to be able to move all the traffic around. And then there is the dashboard, which is basically the access point for the users that want to just interact with this cloud. And a set of other shared services that live beneath, that are not necessarily directly visible to the users, but are those services that let a number of things happen. Now let's see instead the messy part. So this is, this is interesting, right? It seems so clean. And when you look at this, it seems very messy. And here, I think, is where you can see the idea of an operating system for the cloud. If you look at from very far, you can think of that as a microkernel architecture. We have a bunch of services that talk to each other. And the network is the messaging bus between all the components. And it works really like that. So a lot of components interact and need to coordinate and need to authenticate, because of course we are on a network, we are not on a single machine. And the whole thing basically orchestrates and provides the services. Going into detail so that you understand what these components do. Nova is the what's called a compute engine. It's basically the initial component of the OpenStack cloud, and it slowly branched into many other projects. So initially, everything was in this Nova component. What's left is the hypervisor, basically. All the compute nodes are part of the Nova service. The scheduler that decides where to spin up VMs or stuff like that is in Nova. And those are the two more fundamental services that Nova provides you. It is quite agnostic of the virtualization technology. It runs with KVM, Xen, Hyper-V, Microsoft's contributed. I don't know if it's in the latest OpenStack yet, but I know there's a lot of work around that. And even Linux containers. And I think also VMware tried at some point to do something, but I haven't seen any evidence of that. So you can see this as a kind of the kernel, the real kernel of the OpenStack engine. Second important thing is storage services. There are basically two well-established services at this moment in OpenStack. One is Swift, it's called the Object Store, and the other is Cinder, which is the Block Store. What is the difference? I mean, if you are familiar with, for example, Amazon, you can see them as like S3 versus ELB. So one provides you access to objects, named objects. The other one provides you just raw access to blocks. So in one you have access. One is what you use to basically service the images that are then booted, and the other one is can be used instead by the clients to store and save data and retrieve it when it's necessary. What is missing here, for example, is just normal file servers. All these, both of these tools tend to provide a REST API over HTTP and don't really deal with complex file service semantics like NFS or Samba, for example. Although with beneath them, of course, they do use file systems. And the most common one, are either small solution where you use a SAN or a NAS, or you use things like Gluster, Ceph, and other files like that. Even NFS, PNFS, I've seen some work in there. No work on Samba. Okay, third component, network, Neutron. This is what sets up all the networking. The most interesting part is when it sets up basically private networks for a group of machines of the same tenant, but it also manages all the rest of the network. So it's a fundamental piece to orchestrate where the data goes around into this cloud. Other important piece for many, this dashboard. A lot of end-user authentication happens here, for example, although there's another component that does that. And this is where you go as a normal user admin to just check out what VMs you have around, you know, kill VMs, start VMs, change configurations. All of that can also be done through a REST API client, but this is what people use day-to-day normally. Finally, shared services, that thing that was in the first image beneath the others. These are usually services that are not directly exposed to the VMs and to the clients. It's the underlying infrastructure. In this picture, which is a little bit older, it's not the latest OpenStack release. You see only Glance, which is was branched out of Nova, basically, and it's the image service. It provides the images that you use to boot VMs. And it's also usually used the Swift storage, object store, to store them. But it can use anything else. And then there's this Keystone, which is the identity service. And we'll see it a little bit more in detail, but what Keystone does, Keystone is basically a service that gives out tokens to authenticating parties, so that they can go to another service, present this token, and assert their identity. And based on that identity, then there is access control and all, you know, all that nice stuff. Not shown here are two new components of the latest release. Cilometer is a telemetry service. Basically, it is what you use to measure and matter what's going on the cloud. It checks, it basically accounts what's happening by tenant. Tenants are basically, maybe I haven't chosen the term. Tenant is a term used in OpenStack to describe a paying customer, basically. So a tenant can have multiple users in it. So a company might be a tenant that has a bunch of VM, or maybe a division. And so that with Cilometer, basically, you can see what's going on in this infrastructure. It plugs into the queue where all the messages pass and has visibility on every aspect of the communication here. The second service that's also very interesting is Heat. Heat is an orchestration service and basically helps deploy and build in the cloud itself. So it allows you, for example, to spin new hardware so that you can have new nodes, to spin new VMs, turn it down, provision a bunch of that stuff. Okay, so that's just to give a general review. The next question is, where does Samba come into this picture? So what can we do in the Samba community to enhance or complement OpenStack? There are a lot of opportunities here, and I haven't seen much much work from the Samba community and the OpenStack community together. A year ago, maybe a year and a half, I've seen a bunch of patches to use Samba as a store for Cinder, I think. And I wrote a very negative review, sorry. They were very bad. But that's as far as I've seen anything Samba being tried in the OpenStack community, and was there was no Samba developer involved there. It was all by third party. So, what are the two areas that I think make sense? That's quite obvious. Question?
Because I don't remember seeing any patches.
No, they were not patches for Samba. They were patches for Cinder, one of the block store, to use Samba underneath.
Ah, all right. Okay.
And they were kind of bad because basically they were a root exploit in the making.
Ah, right. Yeah, well, many patches are.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. The problem is that I haven't seen anything else since.
Right, okay. But if you know those people and you want to put them in touch,
absolutely,
that would be helpful.
Well, actually, what I told them, you know, I told them Jeremy wrote the user share patch for Novel many years ago.
Yep.
If you really want to do this work, you should talk with him. But they didn't even reply to that. So
okay, thanks.
Simo, what was bad about them actually? Performance, security?
Security. So basically, they were basically allowing you to configure shares completely arbitrarily by allowing you to send blobs into the configuration file, which means Samba runs as root, and there is a root pre-exec thing you can set, right? So that was just instant root. And there were other problems, but in general, the quality was not good, and after the review, they basically disappeared, and I don't know what happened there. No, I haven't personally, but I'm not that exposed to the storage side. So there might have been, and I haven't been involved there.
I haven't seen it either.
Yeah. So the two areas are obviously file services, but it's also a strong, another strong area, which is identity management, and we'll see why. So file services, within file services, I think identified two areas. One is just the classic SMB services for the guests. So this is above the cloud, on top of the cloud operating system, but also storage within the infrastructure. And especially, I think someone had a talk with maybe Michael, I don't know, about SMB3 and Hyper-V. That's probably one of them. And then there's identity management, again, on top of the cloud, so four tenants, or below, for example, in private clouds, where you want to integrate the identity management infrastructure of the cloud itself with the rest of the company because it is a private cloud. So you don't want to have to manage all the use again for the infrastructure of the cloud. So let's see about Samba file services for guests. There is nothing special there if you just want to spin up an SMB server. I mean, these are VM in the end. So if you really want to, what you can do is you just put an SMB server in an image, you spin the image, and the services are available. What's interesting is that, I think, in a cloud is that clouds provide a very interesting elasticity and scalability. So if you are using VMs that need SMB services, you may be spinning a lot of them. If you spin a lot of them, maybe you also want to automatically scale also the file servers. So you don't want to go and install your own SMB servers on your own and then have to decide when to scale them. That's not the cloud paradigm. The cloud paradigm is you prepare a sort of image and then use things like Heat or other third-party orchestration services, and you let the thing automatically scale based on the load. And so there might be, for example, a chance to build a service for doing Samba CTDB clusters that scale on demand on the cloud. Basically, what you would do it would be to grow something, perhaps in CTDB itself, that knows how to access the cloud APIs to spin new nodes and then add these new nodes in CTDB dynamically. So basically, your CTDB server now that only has to deal with, all the difficulties of managing nodes you know about, but also has to deal with automatically spinning new nodes when the load grows. And I think it's like the next step, right?
And taking them away.
And also, finding out that, oops, this whole node died, and there were three nodes on top of it, because there are two levels now. There is the actual physical node, and then there are the VMs running on these physical nodes. And you probably have multiple of them, and depending on how you can orchestrate, you may have multiple CFTP nodes on a single physical node. Or maybe you just use the API to make sure that every single CFTP node is on a different hardware. I mean, that's all to explore. But I think there is a great chance to do something very interesting in this area. Of course, this requires a distributed file system, but we have a number of them. The ones that are used today in OpenStack are Ceph or GlusterFS, but for sure GPFS and other file systems could be used there. So, I mean, the limit is your imagination in the end, right? Okay, so then this was an idea for the top. It can also be used in the infrastructure. But the most interesting part in the infrastructure is not just scaling for client services. It's having a way to support things like live migration. Because one of the things that a cloud infrastructure needs to do in order to be efficient is to be able, at some point, when there are too few VMs running in the cloud, maybe at night or, you know, off the peak of the season when, you know, a lot of customers start spinning down the VM that were used to sell products, you will see that you have a number of nodes that are really not being used much. Now, a VM here, a VM there, a VM there. So you want to consolidate all of them in fewer hardware nodes and shut down those machines. So live migration there becomes fundamental, because you have to live migrate the VM while running from one node to the other. And in order to do that, you need a file system underneath that allows you to keep accessing the disk of the VM all the time while it's migrated. Again, you need basically a distributed file system, or NFS and standby, and have the file system being accessed via the network. Those are the two options. Again, I've seen only NFS, cluster, Ceph. I've seen no standby here. But given, for example, Microsoft involvement with Hyper-V, if you want to do this with Hyper-V, you need SMB3. You have no option. And so if we want to give options, well, then Samba could be very interesting there. So this is on top of the CTD thing, because not only you need to scale there, but you also need to support very efficiently, you know, sharing a single image between two clients, and then, you know, that is a workload that is kind of different from what you normally have in CTDB, I think. In CTDB, the workload is one client just stays on one node, but you don't see the file that client's accessing migrating on another. So,
Simo.
Yes?
Great point on Hyper-V and Microsoft using SMB. But we also use SMB for the migration itself.
Right.
We transfer the memory. So,
absolutely.
Both the storage accessibility and the migration.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, that was my point. Yeah, that was my point. Yeah. It's all, I mean, it's very complex stuff, but also very challenging, very interesting stuff. And, yep. So, that was all file systems. I think those are the two more interesting areas where some exploration might be done. If you have other ideas, speak up or raise your hand and propose them. But I'm going to switch to the identity side. So Samba domain controller for guests. This is the simplest thing. Again, nothing really special here. You could just install your domain controller on a machine and then slowly join other VMs all by hand, blah, blah, blah. But that's not how it works in the cloud. That's the little problem. Guests in the cloud are very, very dynamic. You can spin up on a machine, do a calculation for 30 minutes, killed, doesn't exist anymore. So what is needed is a little bit more flexibility in automatically provisioning these machines when they are created, joining them automatically and securely to the main controller. Why would you want to do that? Well, if you, for example, have a Samba file server that is providing access to data to these machines, it's much easier if they are joined to the same domain so that authentication and all the credentials match and so on and so forth. So how do we join a tenant domain seamlessly but securely? How do we reuse, for example, machine credentials? Because there are two cases here. One is the one where you actually create completely new virtual machines to do something, then you throw them away. Those are like, oh, I install a new computer, I join it, I kill it, and I throw it away. The other case is where you are doing dynamic load. So the machine is not really a throwaway, but it's a machine that you bring it up and bring it down. And when you bring it up again, from an identity point of view, it's still the same machine. It's just that you reinstall the image, because that's kind of how it works in the cloud, you know. You don't really want to know why the machine misbehaved sometimes. You just kill it and restart it from scratch. But you want to have a way, for example, to preserve credentials so it still recognizes the same machine in the domain. So here how it basically works, you know, as a little diagram. User asks for a new VM, and by user, this could be an automated services, like an automated scaling services. It doesn't have to be an actual human, right? Ideally, you have something, point two, which is in this cloud, that create a computer account, then it spin up to the machine, and then that machine basically can join. The main issue is how do you transfer credentials here in a secure way. We've done something within Red Hat, we've been thinking about this problem for a while, and we support pre-creating inactive computers in FreeIPA, meaning that the computer account is not active at all until you use a one-time password that is being given to the machine through the provisioning to basically activate this domain account. And when it's activated, then the password is changed, so nobody else can actually steal the credentials or whatever, and it's good to go. Again, it's nothing much that needs to be done in Samba, just a little bit of plumbing to make this thing possible. So, like, how do I create a computer object that is disabled until the first time the machine touches it? Very, very simple stuff, but it needs to be done in order to provide something. And it's better if you provide something that you didn't, you know, it's not difficult to use. So, like, even just a script, and you say, you know, call the script this way, and all works. Okay, back down below in the infrastructure side. AD, Samba AD for infrastructure services. Why it is interesting? For us in Red Hat, in my team at least, we're thinking a lot about private or hybrid clouds. What is this private hybrid cloud? What most people is exposed to is the public cloud. Now, cloud provided by someone else as a service and you're just a user. But there's also the case in bigger companies where you might want to have your own cloud. So when you have your own cloud, you obviously don't want to start re-implementing users in that cloud that are not the same as the company. You just want to have the company identities being recognized automatically by the infrastructure, so the admins can simply immediately log in if they are, of course, authorized, or group membership, all that stuff. And that means reusing enterprise identities. And enterprise identities come from many sources. So it could be that your enterprise is using Active Directory and Windows clients, and so what you want to do is that your cloud infrastructure actually recognizes those identities. It could be you have a Samba ID domain, it could be you have a free IPA domain, or just a normal LDAP server, or who knows what. They're really, for us, in the Samba community, I think what matters are two cases, basically. Active Directory or Samba ID, perhaps free IPA, I don't know. It is interesting for Red Hat, at least. So, how does authentication identity management work in OpenStack, and how can we plug, you know, the enterprise identity into the cloud? The key component that manages identities or an authentication authorization mostly in OpenStack is called Keystone. Unfortunately, by the way, the OpenStack cloud project has been built, Still, Keystone is seen all as an identity provider. What is an identity provider? It's a component that actually has the users and the groups in its own database and does classic password-based authentication. It's very simple. That's how Keystone was born. Our point of view is to transition this into being an actual authentication provider, not an identity provider, meaning try to make Keystone look at what exists already, not try to replicate all the mistakes and all the management of the identities that we already done in AD, in Samba, and multiple other projects. So this is more or less the current status. It's a little bit more complex than that because we already started working toward the next solution, but this is the very simple thing when it started. You have, actually this is the second step. When it started, there was only the SQL database for everything. The first thing that was done to try to push identities a little bit on the side was to add the LDAP database underneath, but still everything went through Keystone. Password-based authentication, no single sign-on of any kind except its own bearer token thing, and additional data in SQL files for policy reasons, like some custom roles, and then looking into a single LDAP server down there. No support for domains, trusts, nothing like that. This is where, as Red Hat, we are trying to drive Keystone instead. It's a little bit more complicated, as usual, but it actually simplifies Keystone itself. So basically, Keystone loses the ability to talk to the LDAP directly. Our idea is that Keystone shouldn't really care about identities. It should only care that something in front, and in this case, we're using Apache front-end, but could be something else. Something tells you that a user has been authenticated. That could be Kerberos, maybe the pack, to give additional information to Keystone. Could be an X509 certificate. This is already supported in Keystone and used in many universities, especially across Europe, but also in the US in the government. They actually have, for example, the NSA has an OpenStack cloud, and they use only X509 authentication to authenticate to Keystone, so no user and password stuff. And they use data from the certificate to understand who the user is, and then they provision their roles and stuff in the SQL database. It still remains to know what that user can do. But the actual identity doesn't live in Keystone anymore, and that's the point. And so SAML also, we are trying to introduce, and maybe, who knows, maybe NTLM support in the future. Our way to do this is to make this component talk to SSSD, which is the client we use in Red Hat these days to connect to any identity source. And that could be Samba, or AD, or FreeIPA, or an LDAP server, whatever. It has support for all of these things. Although support for AD is really limited to the LDAP and Kerberos protocol. It doesn't do all domain stuff. And so this is where we want to drive it, and Samba is prominent there. And I'll show you soon why. Before that, I need to tell you what is missing from the Samba point of view. And what is missing for me is trust relationship. You can see a cloud infrastructure. If for those that has seen Windows domain from the time of NT4 as a resource domain. What is a resource domain? In the time of NT4, you would create a separate domain where you put a bunch of machines but no users. And the idea was to segregate away those identities for management reasons. And there is the same reason here. It is extremely useful to have a completely separate domain to manage all this chaotic stuff. Not only make it easier to manage, because then you can mess with it and you're not messing with the enterprise identity store. So if you do some mistakes there, it's less important. But also for security reasons, you want to separate who is dealing with the cloud from who is dealing for the enterprise identities, most of the cases. And so if you have a trust in between, you can create two forests. One is the old identity AD or Samba domain in the enterprise, then you have this Forest Trust and you have your own Samba server in the infrastructure that provides authentication for those users transparently. So the users still can keep using their own credentials coming from an enterprise, and they can access directly all the machines in this other forest through the trust. And this is an example. You know, this is pretty close to what to how you can imagine it. The line separates the inside of the company from the cloud infrastructure, and you have your own Windows workstations, maybe joined to a Samba domain. And in this case, I'm showing Linux servers joined to a FreeAPI domain. This picture, I'm showing it first because the last missing piece is this Forest Trust link on the bottom. That's not possible because Samba does not support trusts yet. Forest level trust are not supported. And so we can do this only with Active Directory at the moment. But this is where I want to go in the Samba community. The only thing that changed here is that I swapped Samba for FreeAPI for Samba and Samba for Active Directory. Because this is what you find in many places. You find that they already have Active Directory, and I'm going to change immediately. But we have the chance to put a Samba the AD domain controller in the cloud. The cloud is something new, it's starting now. And so they might as well say, well, if there is a way for us to create a Forest Trust, I can put a Samba AD domain controller there. And the trust allows my users to keep authenticating all the way to the cloud, but I separate those two things. You know, there are different admins managing there, they're not messing with our internal domain. We are all happy. So, what to recap, what can we do? The file server is the more major component we have in Samba. It's a good idea to start from there, at least for some, I think, for Samba community. It's easier to get integrated, I think, in OpenStack because file services are simpler, even conceptually, for most of the OpenStack community. And we have already two places where we can work. One is that the file sharing for guests level. And I didn't know about the Manila project yet. I guess that might be one place where to go. In fact, I did, when I was creating the slide, I had a problem deciding how well Samba can get within the Swift and Cinder components because they don't offer a direct file server API. And apparently other people had the same idea. And then the CDDB angle, where you want to do this interesting, you know, auto-scaling of the infrastructure, both for under cloud and over cloud. And of course, domain control next step, I marked that. I think we need to push on trust support in Samba. It's really important if we want to be able to use this, the scenarios I showed. Improve computer account lifecycle. That's not difficult, but it's something that would make it easier to use Samba in the cloud. And of course, there is work to be done to make Keystone, which is the authentication piece in the cloud, be able to use Kerberos and NTLM eventually, maybe, for authentication. Because at the moment, Keystone basically supports just username and password. That's not single sign-on. And that's it. So if you have any question.
Thank you, Simon.
No, I'd actually like to make some comments, and I appreciate very much that Simo has given an overview of the OpenStack ecosystem and where the points of need are. I really appreciate you pointing those out. But one of the questions that you did not answer is how do we get, even if we do work to extend the capabilities of Samba, how do we get them into the project?
Ooh.
And so I'd like to just, with your permission, spend a few moments talking about that.
Absolutely. Go on.
So the OpenStack community consists of projects. So Horizon is a project. Nova Compute is a project. Glance is a project. Cinder is a project. Swift is a project. Keystone is a project. Manila is a project. Heat is a project. Trove is a database as a service project. Each project has a project technology chair. That person oversees all of the activities of that project. And throughout the course of a year, the PTC runs regular engineering sessions over IRC and over Etherpads. And that's when a lot of the design for the upgrade of his project is handled with the community. Now, there are two OpenStack conferences every year. They're held every 6 months. In fact, there is a major release of OpenStack that happens every 6 months. That's its cadence.
And that, I have to say, there is one of the conferences happening right now.
And at that conference, there is a release stream, there is a commercial stream, and there is another part that's tacked onto the side of that conference, which is called the conference is called the OpenStack Summit. So the bit that's bolted onto the side of the summit is what's known as the OpenStack Development Summit. And that is where each of the PTCs have sub-PTCs for different parts of the project that are being handled, and they run a room this sort of size, packed full of people, who then sit down in front of generally interactively with an Etherpad, where they review the design and solicit additional design input. Now, do not think for one moment that if you have a bright idea sitting in the chair and you have not had that included into the blueprint for the project, no matter how bright your idea, it does not get into the project.
Yeah, that's a fundamental difference from the Samba community. Everything, every change is designed up front. Only the very simplest bug fixes go through the continuous integration directly and get reviewed. If you don't have a blueprint and a design, especially if you're doing APIs, for example, you have to have an API document that explains what the API does and how it does it, and it has to be completely detailed, and a blueprint that explains how you're going to implement that. And you have to find which project to go into, or whether you have to create even a new project, because it might be something completely new. So yes, it's completely design driven.
So, Simo, sorry for stealing the floor from you a little bit there. What I would like to highlight to everyone here is if you have an interest in participating, the only way to do that is to be actively involved with the OpenStack community through the appropriate PTC engagements and be present at the conference. And really, that's where I should have been this week. Anyhow, thank you.
Any other questions, remarks, comments on OpenStack? Yes, Steve?
So Sven was mentioning that some of the mapping drivers that people have done for other file systems, you know, are under 1,000 lines of code.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not about managing Samba or putting a file server, it's about, you know, mapping Cinder.
No, it's actually about managing Samba.
Well, if we want to, you know, map to Ceph or map to Gluster, there's a minimal piece that's less than 1,000 lines of code to get Cinder block commands written to a file system and to handle provisioning and these sorts of things. It was much smaller, it seemed, than I expected. And what I was wondering about is, I haven't seen one of these. Can it be, you know, mapping to a kernel driver, or does it have to map into, you know, user space Python code or something?
It's up to you. You propose, you do. I mean, people doesn't have any preconception of using existing components there. It's true that OpenStack is mostly Python code, so the actual projects themselves, the code in there, is going to be Python almost certainly. There is some use of other things. So I think Horizon starting using some Node.js, for example, I think. But it doesn't really matter. In the end, if you have a design, if you have a reason to use a specific component that is not Python code, you get review, you get a review, you get questions, you answer them. If everybody's happy with that, you just go implement it.
My worry is that since there's at least five examples mapping to file systems, right, there's Gluster and Ceph and, you know, GPFS and I don't know what else is there. There's NFS now in Manila. At least four or five examples, probably more. It's better if you look like one of the examples, and I'm wondering what those look like, whether they're C code calling into kernel or whether they're, you know, Python stuff.
So keep in mind that OpenStack is still a very young project. It's growing very fast, but it doesn't do everything. So right now, what you probably refer to is Cinder or Swift. You're just seeing the API that is used to access the actual file underneath, but what you're not seeing is how to install the whole thing. That's something that a project like HEAT does, and that's another ball of wax.
I could speak to the Swift side of it, for what it's worth. Yeah, Swift, like the Ceph implementation is a C implementation, and the Gluster implementation is Python over a C library, I believe. Just to give you some idea of the variety of implementation you could see. Neither, both of those map out to user space, but they're user space file systems. So, you know, in general, I mean, propose an approach and see where you land. It seems very, you know, that way. So don't think, you know, oh, I must be in Python or I must be in C or must be that. It looks very wide open.
I think it's easier if it runs on Linux.
Yeah.
No, thank you. So this is actually, to some degree, is a problem. I mean, one of the main issues developing for OpenStack is actually developing this stuff. There are various tools in the OpenStack community. One of them is called, for example, DevStack, and that kind of try to bootstrap a whole cloud in your own machine by using QEMU to virtualize stuff. And that works only, initially worked only on Ubuntu. Red Hat came in, added support for Fedora, but, you know, it's... There are other distributions you can use, and you can also go to Git trees. But if running Linux, it's easier.
Okay, thank you once again. I'm sorry I have to close discussion.